Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Muy buenos dias. Muchas enchiladas, everybody. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. No, it's not Taco Tuesday. Kind of feels like it, though. Good to have you here. The number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. A few quick things. I don't know if you have any plans to move to Poland anytime soon, but if you do, you know, one thing, be sure to take the Relevant Radio app with you. Because although we don't have any stations in Poland, you can certainly listen to the Relevant Radio programming wherever you are in the world. It's easy and it's free. But if you go to Poland, just FYI, the Polish government has adopted a new pro-family policy that's intended to increase birth rates. And parents with 4-plus kids will have their income tax-free allowance raised from about $7,355 per year. Now, this is changed from euros. Up to a little over $20,000 per year. Parents will also receive a one-time payment of about $3,000 for every second and additional child ages 1 to 3. So, I mean, not that you would do this for the money. I'm not suggesting that, obviously. But if you are in Poland and you're newly married and you're thinking, well, should we have kids? Well, this is one incentive on the part of the government to induce people to, well, that's probably an unfortunate pun, to encourage people. That's pretty cool, Cyrus, don't you think? An extra $3,000 per child just from the government saying thank you for having another child, huh?
I wouldn't sneeze at that.
No. No, plus they'll raise your tax-free allowance to $20,000 and change. So it's yet another reason to welcome some of the blessings from Almighty God into your family. How have you been, Cyrus? You haven't been with us for a few days.
I have really missed being on the show. Yeah, I've missed talking with you and all the laughing we do behind the scenes. So it's nice to be back. Yeah, Merry Christmas, Patrick.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. This might be the first time I've said that to you all these days later. Uh-huh. And Happy New Year.
Thanks. Yep, my best buddy from growing up, sixth grade. We were best friends and we were college roommates and I lived with this guy until I got married. He's living in Indonesia now, and he just came to visit with his wife and their infant.
What's he doing over there?
He teaches English. He's the head of a really cool school. I'll tell you more about it some other time. But
I already speak English. So.
Yeah, you don't need to go. You're fine.
My accent is pretty good, they tell me.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Uh-huh. Yeah, but it was nice to catch up. It was really needed.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Yeah, as I mentioned when I got on the microphone on Monday, we had a wonderful Christmas, and one of the blessings that we received was a head cold that kind of swept through the household.
Yes.
I'm still getting over
it's
that.
It's going around. You are not alone. Mm.
Well, that's good to know. You know, one guy who is alone now, Spencer Eldon. I know you'll remember his name, Cyrus, because you and I were riffing on this guy 6 months ago when he filed a lawsuit against Nirvana. Remember this one? He was the baby in the picture of the Nirvana album.
The naked baby. The Nirvana baby.
He was in the pool, and there's a dollar bill, like, I guess it's on like a fishing line or something. It's in the water in front of him. Remember this story? And he filed a lawsuit against Nirvana?
Yeah, after spending a lifetime of reaping the benefits of being the baby on the Nirvana album.
Well, there is an update here. I'm sure you'll be interested in this. He filed this lawsuit against Kurt Cobain's estate, also Nirvana's surviving members, accusing them of sexual exploitation and child pornography. He claimed the artwork constituted child sexual abuse and that he'd suffered lifelong damage from having his body plastered on the album cover. However,
just in case you forgot what made Nirvana famous.
Yeah. Well, here's another one of those true confessions. I mean, this song was okay, but I never got bitten by the Nirvana bug.
Nope.
I just didn't.
Me neither. I was the generation that loved these guys, but they never did anything for me.
Yeah, I didn't get into it. I don't know what that says about me. Maybe it says something good. But in any case, poor Mr. Eldon, after his lifelong suffering of damage from this. Now, granted, he was an infant, so he had no say in the matter in the beginning. So I'm not disputing the fact that, in retrospect, I mean, let's say that was you or me or take your pick. I don't dispute the fact that somebody later on might say, I don't like that. And I was not consulted. Well, of course not, because you were 6 months old. But whatever the reason is, I don't dispute the fact that he has a right to say that wasn't good and you exploited me. But he didn't live that way, like you said, for lo these many years. He's been cashing in on this and associating himself with this. And I guess now he figured that he would be in a position to cash in even bigger. That's what it kind of looks like to me. However, federal judge Fernando M. Holguin, he threw out the case a couple of days ago because Mr. Eldon missed his December 30th deadline to file a response to Nirvana's motion to dismiss. The judge dismissed the case with leave to amend, meaning that Eldon and his lawyers have until January the 13th to refile the case. If he misses that deadline, the case will be dismissed without prejudice and closed. That'll be the end of it. I kind of hope it will be the end of it. Because this is frivolous, if you ask me. That's all. That's it. That's the whole story.
Yeah, good luck to the guy, but yeah.
Now, speaking of money, this is cool. This popped up on the radar screen over the last couple of days. Keanu Reeves, star of the Matrix movies. And also, what was the other one? The shooting movies.
He was in Speed. He was Bill and Ted.
No. The one where he's... He wears like a black trench coat.
Oh, the Matrix.
He fights off. No, yeah. No. He fights off the bad guys who are trying.
Oh, John Wick.
That one. Yeah. I was visiting with my 30-ish daughter and her husband and their kids. Nancy and I were visiting, and they said, "Hey, you need to watch this movie. It's called John Wick." And I didn't know anything about it. It was actually entertaining, if that's what you like. You know, if you like the idea of bad guys trying to kill you every which way. And he winds up surviving. But that's all it was. There was really nothing more to it that I could discern. But anyway, that Keanu Reeves, he started a nonprofit several years ago, over 5 years ago. And he kept it real quiet, didn't talk about it, didn't let anyone know about it. But that whole time, he was donating through his nonprofit upwards of 70% of the money he was making from the Matrix franchise to cancer research. And he didn't say anything about it. I guess it got found out in a good way, and people really like that. He's 57. He was reportedly paid $10 million up front for the 1999 original Matrix. He's earned a further $35 million in residuals because the movie was such a huge hit. So what's that, $45 million? So according to the sources that are listed here in the New York Post article, Keanu Reeves donated 70% of that money. 70% of that money. Over $31 million to leukemia research. And the reason is because his younger sister, Kim, had been battling the disease, leukemia that is, for 8 years by the time he started making these donations. She was diagnosed with blood cancer in 1991. She spent a decade in and out of treatment before finally entering remission in 2001. Reeves has continued to give money to research in the years since his sister was cured and created this cancer research fund with his own money. Speed, is that one of the movies that you were thinking of, Cyrus?
That is one of them, yeah.
That's the bus one,
that's
right?
The bus, yep. Okay. Sandra Bullock.
I never saw that one, but I do recall the premise, right? If he let up on the, if he slowed down below a certain speed, the bus would blow up.
If you have just
that's like the whole movie, right?
That's the
there,
whole
right?
movie. Yep.
For two hours.
I've always really liked Keanu Reeves. I was a big fan of Bill and Ted's when I was growing up, and The Matrix was, I think it's one of the best movies ever made. I'm not counting the sequels in that. But that
of course, that's
Matrix
what The Matrix wants you to
good.
Say.
Good. That is what The Matrix wants me to say.
I know this steak is not guy. Real. Remember that scene?
I do, yep. There is no spoon. I like that line.
So, he is quoted in 2009, Keanu Reeves, he was giving an interview to Ladies Home Journal. He says, I have a private foundation that's been running for 5 or 6 years, and it helps aid a couple of children's hospitals and cancer research. I don't like to attach my name to it. I just let the foundation do what it does. He auctioned off a 15-minute Zoom date with himself, and the money that's raised from that, this is back in 2020, the money that was raised from that went to a summer camp program for children in Idaho who have cancer. And the winning bidder paid over $19,000 for a 15-minute Zoom date. I mean, she can say that she's been on a Zoom date with Keanu Reeves.
Whoa.
I think that's it. That's but, I mean, there's more to the
story. Whoa is something Keanu Reeves would say.
Uh-huh.
So, whoa. That was like his catchphrase. It was like every movie for a while.
Whoa.
Kind of reminds me of Lieutenant Dan, you know, from...
the actor.
Forrest Gump.
He's,
yeah. Gary Sinise.
Yeah, he is cool. That guy's all right. I like him.
He's another guy who's just in the background quietly, and he does so much work for veterans, and especially veterans who have been injured in war, and getting them housing and medical treatment and prosthetic limbs, and just it's amazing how much he does for these veterans. And I don't know if you saw this, Cyrus, but there was a tribute video, and I believe it was either for his birthday or it was for Christmas. And it just this long, long list of luminaries, including Tom Hanks, by the way, who shows up at the very end. And they're all, in addition to many of the people that his service has helped through these fundraisers and things, it was a really moving tribute. You know, they said, hey, sit down, take a look at this. And they fired up on an iPad. So you're watching him watch this video. And for like, I don't know, 10, 12 minutes, it was rather lengthy. It's just one glowing tribute of gratitude to him after another. He wasn't expecting it. He didn't know they were doing this.
Isn't it celebrities and service people thanking him?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. That's moving. And you can see the guy starting to cry. The work he does for his charity far surpasses any meaning any of his movies, no matter how great the movie is. That charity work is what his life is all about.
Yeah, that is his legacy. That's true. But, you know, I think because the two go together, he wouldn't have the standing had it not been for those blockbuster movies. Like if he hadn't been Lieutenant Dan in Forrest Gump or some of the other big roles that he's played in his career, he wouldn't have the standing. He wouldn't have the clout. And he wouldn't, I imagine a lot of that money has come from him, you know, that he has put his own money in these endeavors to help people. So he's talk about giving back to the community. You know, he's not just hoarding it for himself and counting his pennies and buying new mansions. He's doing what Jesus said, you know, to help those who are to start from the beginning, feeding the hungry, giving drink to the thirsty, clothing the naked, and all the ways in which he's doing that. I don't know. I think he might be Catholic. I just don't know. But even if he's not, even if he's not even a Christian, I think he's exemplifying a Christian, what's the word I'm looking for here, ideal given to us by Jesus to help others. And I guess what struck me, back to Keanu Reeves for a second, what struck me about his particular philanthropy was that he kept it quiet. Not that Gary Sinise doesn't keep it quiet, but I mean, I don't think you can keep that quiet. I think it's, by its very nature, it's going to be seen by people. But even there, I don't think that Gary Sinise, he doesn't give me the impression anyway that he's doing it for the limelight.
No, I think it's only, we only know about it because he's a celebrity. He's not the one going out saying, hey, look at all the great things I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another guy that reminds me of is Steve Buscemi, who used to be a firefighter. And then after 9/11, he went back to his old house, his old fire department, and volunteered. Just out.
Oh, was it on 9/11 or shortly after 9/11?
It might have been on 9/11, but it was at least the day after. I mean, he got there as soon as he possibly could. And this wasn't a publicist thing. It was like, what can I do to help?
So he had the skill set. He had the experience. So it wasn't like he was endangering himself others by just showing up.
Yeah, he was there to help.
Yeah.
That's outstanding. I love it. I love seeing that.
I like that. He's sort of become a cultural icon, kind of like Bill Murray has.
Yeah, you know, yes.
You just put his face on something, uh-huh. and people will like it and yeah. often laugh at it.
Yeah.
But not in a bad way.
Right.
Well, you know, for me, my takeaway from all this, number one is, you know, bully for them. I'm happy for them. Happy for Gary Sinise. Happy for Keanu Reeves. I have no clue what their personal lives are like. It's not for me to know. So I'm not even speculating. But isn't it worth stopping and noting that you've got some celebrity people who, if they were going to go with the flow and do what so many other celebrities do, just simply turn inward and focus on their own pleasure and their own toys and their own money and what they've got on the basis of their talent and such. That's what so many people do. I think maybe the majority, if I had to guess, are doing that with the millions that they've made. Okay, whatever. But isn't it neat to see somebody like that in the secular world who is exemplifying, at least in that area, maybe if not in other areas, but at least in that area, exemplifying what Jesus said to do when it came to things like using your wealth, using whatever you may have to help other people. And so what I draw from that is, look, if even these secular guys can do that, how much more so should we not be attentive to these things ourselves? And not that I'm saying that people of faith aren't, you know, that in fact it would be counterproductive for that to be known and publicized. Jesus said, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing when you give alms. You know, do it in secret. Don't do it for fanfare. Don't do it for show or applause, because then you've got your reward. That's your reward, the applause. But if you really want to lay up treasure in heaven, Jesus says, do it quietly. And don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing when you give. So for me, these stories are motivators. I hope when I share them with all of you that you find it the same kind of thing, that it's a motivator to really stop and consider, to what extent are you really being generous? And to give over $31, $32 million of your hard-earned paycheck to help fund cancer research, that to me qualifies as generous. Well, I think we also are qualified to take a break. We'll do that now, and we'll come right back to the Patrick Madrid Show. You're listening on Relevant Radio. Where else? It's the only place you can get the Patrick Madrid Show, right here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Tell your friends. I'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
All right. Well, you know, I've been back since Monday.
But I haven't. I played it for myself.
Oh, okay.
I'm welcoming myself back.
I thought you were Horseshack on this one. I thought I was Mr. Cotter.
I've never seen this show.
Horseshack.
It didn't exist in my little world when I was growing up.
He would be, unless you're going to try to pass yourself off as, what's his name?
I couldn't tell you.
You could.
This show does not exist in my original universe.
Yeah, I could see why. I could see why. All right, let's do some phone calls. Let's start off with Mark in Atlanta. Good morning, Mark.
My question concerns the reverence to the real presence of Christ in the tabernacle during Mass. As growing up, I was an altar boy in the 60s, and you'd never dare cross in front of the tabernacle without genuflecting, and before Mass, during, and after. And I see now that the deacons and all the people on the altar, I understand there's an altar of sacrifice and an altar of adoration, but it just blows me away that if Christ was really sitting there physically present as you and I are in his throne, and there was a veil in front of him, that people would turn their back to him and bow towards the empty altar, sacrificial altar, mm-hmm. and I teach CCD classes where they catch up for the sacraments of confession, Holy Communion, and it's just it's glaring to me that there's not the reverence to Christ in the tabernacle, or even mm-hmm. the acknowledgement. So I wanted to get your thoughts, because typically priests and deacons will bow to the sacrificial altar rather than the adoration altar.
Okay, there's a lot there, a lot of good there, Mark. So I'll begin by concurring with your perception that many people, sadly, perhaps even some who serve in the sanctuary, don't show what I think most people could reasonably say is a kind of due reverence to our Lord in the Holy Eucharist. I mean, it could be exaggerated, although I don't know how you could exaggerate showing reverence to God himself, but all other things being equal, when you pass in front of the tabernacle, as you know from growing up, as I did when I was an altar boy in the 1960s myself, you're right. It was absolutely drilled into us from the very beginning that when you pass in front of the tabernacle, for whatever reason, lighting candles or whatever, you genuflect to the tabernacle because Jesus is there. Now, that has an effect, I believe, Mark, of encouraging other people who see that kind of respect to be respectful in that way themselves. It has a positive reinforcement effect, and many people who grew up with that, like you and I, we look around at times and say, where did it go? I have a theory or two on that, but I'd like to also talk about the inverse of that phenomenon. So the phenomenon is when people are showing the proper respect for Jesus and they are, you know, at least just those basic modes of showing reverence are present. Other people see it, they're edified by it, and they tend to adopt those same habits as well. But the reverse is also true. And that is that when the priest or the deacon or both or lay people, whoever it may be, when in enough numbers, they don't show a due and proper reverence to Jesus in the tabernacle, that has the tendency to propagate out to others who will also sort of loosen their hold, even without realizing it, on their reverence. So I definitely know the phenomenon you're talking about, Mark. I'll tell you a quick story, if you don't mind. Years ago, I was speaking at a parish in San Diego someplace. And after the event was over, a Mormon gentleman who was there, he was from the local stake center, and he was there to hear the talk. And he came up and introduced himself, and we chatted for a few moments. And when I had come to the narthex of the church, when I'd come to the vestibule of the church from where I was speaking up in the sanctuary at the Ambo, I had turned and I genuflected before the tabernacle, and I came back to where he was, and that's when he introduced himself. And he asked me, he said, what was that little curtsy that you just did up there? He said, I noticed you curtsied. And I said, well, it's not really a curtsy. We call it a genuflection. And I proceeded to explain to him briefly that because Jesus is truly present in the Holy Eucharist, and that's in the tabernacle, it's a sign of reverence to Jesus when we make that gesture by dipping down on one knee. And his reaction really surprised me. It's always stayed with me. I've never forgotten it. He looked at me with a kind of quizzical expression on his face, Mark. And he said, huh. He said, I don't know what to think of that. He says, because I've been to some Catholic masses before, and I guess he meant like a wedding mass or a funeral mass or something. And he says, none of the Catholics that I have ever seen at mass seem to think what you just said. And I said, what do you mean? I said, that's Catholic teaching. He says, yeah, but he says, I've seen plenty of Catholics who are not focused on this. They sure don't seem to think that that's actually Jesus. And I recognize the truth of what he was saying. And he concluded by saying, and this is what has never left me, he said, I don't believe what you believe as a Catholic. I don't believe that stuff. He says, at our church, the Mormon church, we have a sacrament meeting, and it's just a piece of bread, and it's just a little cup of water, and that's all it is, and that's all we think it is. He said, but if I believed that Jesus Christ was actually present in what you call the Eucharist, in that tabernacle, he said, I would be prostrate on the ground on my face, adoring him if he were really there. And his final comment was, that's why I don't think that most Catholics believe what you just said, because they don't seem to show that kind of reverence. Now, man, did I feel the truth of what he said, coming from a Mormon of all people. And all these years later, I have thought about that many times, and I've wondered about how the point that you're making, which is, you know, what happened to this reverence, you know, what would it take to restore it? And here's my theory. I told you I had a theory. My theory is it's person specific. So the more you show reverence, not in a showy way, but the more you show reverence and teach your children and your grandchildren to show reverence, and the more it will spread, the more people will be edified. And not that necessarily everybody will show it, but more people will. And eventually, maybe we can regain that lost sense of mystery and reverence for Jesus. So long answer to a short question, Mark. What do you think?
Well, you've got me crying, and I have to concur with you. Wasn't it Peter Kreeft or maybe Chesterton said, you know, if we recognize the real presence, we should all have crash helmets in the pews, knowing what's really going on. And so, yeah, I concur. I think, yeah, just example, and it's. But, you know, the bad examples, when I bring these kids up on the altar, and I've talked about it before, it seems it's very easy for them to just act like it's playtime up there and and not do that. So, yeah, it's just amazing to me. And yet the priests have said, no, during Mass you can bow to the sacrificial altar, turn your back on the altar of adoration, and that's legit. I guess it is. Now, I've seen some priests, they'll go around the front of that altar and bow, so you don't know if they still have the tabernacle that they're bowing to, but yeah. Very few.
That's one of the unfortunate side effects of some of what I would regard to be deficient and even aberrant theology that became popularized in the 1980s. And, you know, to even refer, I mean, technically speaking, yes, if you have an adoration chapel, the Blessed Sacrament is reposed on an altar. Often Mass can be celebrated in that space. So the altar there is not, strictly speaking, an altar of adoration, because after all, altars are for sacrifice. And that's the purpose, the essence of the altar at Mass, is for the sacrifice to be offered by the priest. It's the once for all, the very same unique, unable to be repeated sacrifice of Jesus, but it's represented to us each time the priest celebrates Mass. But and I'll say thank you, Mark. Thank you for your comment. I appreciate it, and I'd like to expand on that for just a moment. I remember vividly when in Southern California, what I knew then to be a serious mistake. That looking back on it later, I said this is a serious mistake, and that was a pastoral letter that was sent out that told the people at Mass, you're not allowed to kneel anymore during the Eucharistic prayer. And that, of course, is the traditional posture in the United States, is to kneel. Now, we're talking about in the West. They don't do that in the Eastern churches, but we're talking here about the Roman Rite of the Catholic Church. And the edict went out. No more kneeling. You're not allowed to kneel. You have to stand. And I recall when that came out, there was a real strong negative reaction to that among many people. Like, why? I mean, what's wrong with kneeling? Showing Jesus respect. When Jesus went into the Garden of Gethsemane and he was praying to the Father before his passion began, he knelt down. Jesus knelt down. If it's good enough for Jesus to kneel before the Father, why are we not allowed to kneel? And many other similar kinds of questions were asked. But this was enforced with ruthless efficiency, so much so that within a matter of a year or two, it became the norm in much of Southern California, where Catholics would just simply, they would not kneel. And they did so because they were told not to. And as I say, and the reasons that were given, the sort of pseudo-liturgical, pseudo-theological reasons that were raised in this effort, I thought were woefully deficient and in many respects missed the point, because there was an emphasis, an undue, and I would argue an improper and faultily theological emphasis on the presence of Christ in the people, and a deficient attention to the presence of Christ in a unique, sacramental, substantial way in the Holy Eucharist. So what happened was, now you've got literally millions of people now, unique to this area, unlike any other part of the country, who refused to kneel. Well, they no longer knelt because they were told to. And this would be true also after Holy Communion, or the Lamb of God, the places where you traditionally kneel in adoration, they were told not to. And sadly, it continues to this day. So the reason I raise this as an example would be, whatever the intended effect might have been, and I'd like to take everybody at their word and assume good faith on everybody's part. I like it when people give me the benefit of the doubt. So I want to give everyone the benefit of the doubt, but the results were disastrous, absolutely disastrous, because you can see, and I would love to see a study done, just the correlation between a precipitous, dramatic loss of reverence for our Lord and the Holy Eucharist, to the point where many Catholics nowadays, in certain localities in any case, they don't even realize what the Church teaches, that this is actually Jesus truly present in the Blessed Sacrament. They actually have become conditioned to think that this is just a symbol. And some of these pastoral decisions that in retrospect I think are magnified as being imprudent, nonetheless, we're still living with these effects. I'll give you one other example. It's hugely divisive. It divides the body of Christ. It divides the people of God. I can think of one example, and then I'll take a break here. I was speaking at a men's conference. I think it was in Phoenix, if I'm not mistaken, maybe 6-8 years ago. And Bishop Olmsted was the main celebrant. We were in a very large auditorium, and it seems to me that maybe there were a couple thousand men who were there. So just a sea of people, of men. And when it came time for the consecration, 99% of everybody in that auditorium knelt, as they should have, and the deacon knelt, as deacons are supposed to. Deacons are supposed to kneel during the consecration, not stand. But there were a handful of guys, and I'm guessing they were probably from Southern California, who refused to kneel. Now, you may say, well, maybe they had knee problems or maybe they had back problems. Maybe, but they could have sat down. So it was so divisive and it was so disruptive that you've got this sea of, 2,000 men kneeling and maybe 10 or so of them scattered around. They're not all standing together, just scattered around. They're standing up and you could feel how uncomfortable it must have been for everybody and how distracting it was, and they refused to kneel. So that's another reason why sometimes these aberrations that may seem good in the moment turn out to not be so good. And so what Mark was talking about the importance of reverence for our Lord and Holy Communion can be regained. We can regain that reverence. We just have to start doing it. So anyway, those are my thoughts on it. Break time. The number is 888-914-9149. I will be right back.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Very clever, Cyrus. Very, very clever. Well played. Let's go to Diana in Cedar Grove, New Jersey. Hi, Diana.
Hi, Patrick. I am a massage therapist, and last Friday, one of my clients shared with me that he'd spent the morning at a funeral mass for his best friend's dad. And he is not a practicing Catholic. He was baptized and raised Catholic, but I guess doesn't know his catechesis very well. When it came time to receive, he went up there and then noticed his Eucharistic minister was not wearing a mask. Said to himself, there's no way I'm putting that thing in his mouth, in my mouth. His words, not
that
mine,
thing,
by the way.
He said?
That he said, there's no way I'm putting that thing in my mouth. So he just quietly took it, went back to the pew, and stuck it in between the pages of one of the books, either a missalette or a hymnal. And I was horrified, and I told him, I know you didn't realize what you did, but you committed a great blasphemy. As soon as you leave here, you need to call, the church and speak with the father and let him know. And he basically, said that I was making too big a deal about nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just God. That's, come on, it's just God. You're making a big deal out of it. Sticking God in a book in the pew when, you know, no big deal.
Yep.
Obviously, so, you were right, Diana.
Yeah, so I took it upon myself as soon as the session was over. I called the church, and, of course, the office was closed, but I told the answering service, it's a sacramental emergency. Father's going to want to speak with me. And when they patched me through, he was absolutely horrified, and he was angry. He said, I think he's despicable. And I said, well, I don't think he meant any harm. He just doesn't realize what he did. And he said, but you told him. And I'm like, yeah, right. But he still doesn't get the gravity of it.
Jesus said not to call people you fool. So I'm going to resist the temptation to say that about this man. But the priest is right. I mean, that is a despicable thing to do. It's disrespectful, hugely sacrilegious, all of the above. But what a good Catholic you are. Not that you were being a busybody, but you knew that this consecrated host was tucked away in one of the, I guess, in a missalette in one of the pews. So I'm happy that you were able to at least let the priest know. And do you know whether or not he was able to retrieve that host?
To get back in touch with him and ask if he could tell me approximately where he was sitting so that I could then let Father know. And, of course, he didn't react well to that. He basically told me, you know, stick to doing massages. So I let Father know, but he was able to galvanize some volunteers, and they did go through the missalettes one by one until they found it. And then he called me back and let me know. And basically, I was horrified because I do understand what he did, which obviously, or I wouldn't have reacted the way I did. Yeah. But is there anything that I can do for this man, you know, other than pray for him?
Well, praying will go an awful long way, so certainly do that in your kindness. I, you know, if that's the kind of guy he is, if I were you, I would...
He doesn't seem to me to be a bad guy. I think he just thinks he doesn't get it. That's all. He just doesn't get it.
Well, if he's willing to listen to you, maybe this is God's way of putting you in his path for this reason. I mean, if he's willing to listen to you and you can evangelize him, great. I mean, the martyrs lost their lives for their service to the people that they evangelized often. You know, they would be tortured and killed for their trouble. And yet they went to these people very often anyway, knowing that they would have to suffer and maybe even die for it. So if you have to have a few unpleasant conversations, but you're going to evangelize him, then I see that as a good opportunity for you, honestly, if he'll come back.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. I admire your zeal for holy things, and the most holy thing of all, of course, is our Lord in the Holy Eucharist. So I'm glad you did what you did, Diana.
Thank you, Patrick, and
you're
may
welcome.
2022 bring only wonderful things for you and everyone you love.
Oh, thank you so much, and I pray the same for you and everybody listening. We need a break from the insanity. We need a break from the last 2 years. Of craziness. Please, Lord. Let's go to Albert now in San Marcos, Texas. Hi, Albert. I almost said hi, Marcos. Hi, Albert.
Yes. I'm a member of the university parish here in San Marcos. It's Texas State University. Mm-hmm. And the parish is called Our Lady of Wisdom. We have a sanctuary, and then there's a vestibule outside. The students, I can't say that it's all of the students, but the students certainly that work there, if they pass across that line with the tabernacle, they always bow, even if they're outside of the sanctuary.
That's good. That's really good.
Yeah.
That reminds me of the Newman Center in Tempe, Arizona. Nancy and I love to go out to Phoenix, and we do it as often as we can, in the cold weather months, by the way. But the Newman Center there at the little Catholic parish right on the corner of University Avenue, right in the heart of the university, not only is it a very beautiful chapel with beautiful, beautiful images. In fact, I've taken pictures of some of them and posted them on my Twitter feed if you want to see some of them. Very impressive. But I noticed as well that when Nancy and I would go to Mass there, it seemed to me that the majority of the people there were students because they were young, and they too were very reverent. And that made me feel good, you know, that they're showing the Lord that kind of reverence. So I can imagine how you feel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm 80 years old, and the students just inspire me all the time.
I imagine they do. Well, God bless them. And what a great thing for you to be around people like that. Thank you, Albert. How about Ben now in Breezewood, Pennsylvania, a town I have driven through many a time on my way east or west. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning. Yeah, it's the Turnpike and I-70 there, meet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was calling about your comments about Keanu Reeves, and that's great that he has done what he's done. But
yeah.
The John Wick movie, I remember wanting to see it because I like Keanu Reeves, but the USCCB review gave it an O for morally offensive because of pervasive violence and stuff like that. And so I was just wondering if you found it redeeming enough to see. You said it was entertaining, but I was just wondering if you could elaborate.
Well, it was, I don't know which one it was. It wasn't the first one, and I don't know how many different movies there are in that franchise. I mean, so whatever the nth one was that I watched. And
okay.
We have a habit in our family that if there's, you know, one of us is holding the remote control. So if there's something on the screen that we know we shouldn't be watching, we just fast forward through it. So, you know, whatever might have been in that movie probably just got skipped past and I didn't notice it. But yeah, there was plenty of violence. That was the whole thing. It was the whole premise of it, was that a whole bunch of people were trying to kill him. And he was just trying to get away from them, and the only way he could defend himself was shooting back. So, yeah, it was very, very violent, no question about it. I personally don't find that morally offensive, that kind of violence. I don't find it morally offensive any more than the movie Tombstone with all the gunfights and the shootout at the OK Corral, probably equally as violent as that John Wick movie that I saw. But as I recollect, that was the only thing that struck me as being problematic, if, you know, even if it were problematic. Was that. So if there were any other scenes, my son-in-law probably buzzed right by those.
Okay. Yeah, on the review, it said there was some disrespect towards the Catholic Church, but that was probably the first movie.
Oh, okay.
That was the first movie, and you saw, like, the second, or I think there's a third. I'm not
There may have it. Been. It might have been whatever the most recent one is, because this was probably about a year, year and a half ago. So I just don't know.
Yeah.
You know. And that's and I should probably answer your other question. Do I recommend it? No, I don't recommend it. I had never even seen any of the John Wick movies. It's just that my son-in-law said, hey, you know, this is a brand new John Wick movie. What's it about? Well, people are trying to kill him, so he has to get out of all these situations. So, okay, yeah, let's see it. And it's like a big disposable movie as far as I was concerned.
I see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all I had to...
Yeah. Hey, Ben, let me ask you, are you familiar with the Focus on the Family resource called Plugged In? It's pluggedin.com. Have you ever seen that website?
I'm sorry, Focus on the Family? Well,
yeah, they're a resource, this particular resource for movies and even games and things. It's called Plugged In. It's pluggedin.com. Have you ever gone there to see a movie reviewed? Well, that's very helpful if you're interested in such things, because obviously you kept an eye on what the USCCB had to say on the John Wick, the first movie. But PluggedIn.com, I have found over the years, very reliable. And if the kids say, hey, mom and dad, and of course, they're all adults now, but back in the day, can we go see this movie? And of course, I wouldn't know what the movie was. So I'd say, well, let's pull it up on PluggedIn.com. And it breaks it down. It tells you whatever the positive elements might be. It tells you all the negative elements. Violence, drug use, profanity. It even gets, it'll tell you how many of which word is used and how many times. Sexual content, other things like that. It gives you a real good breakdown. And there was more than one time when going through that together with my children, my teenagers, I'd say, okay, now do you really want to go see this movie based upon everything you know that's going to be in it? And more than a few times, sort of sheepishly, they'd say, well, no, I guess I don't. Because now that I know... So I found that very helpful, and I like to recommend it.
Okay. Well, thanks.
You got it. Thank you, and I appreciate the phone call today. How about Anne Marie now in Westbrook, Maine? Good morning, Anne Marie.
Good morning. I thought that this was an important remark to make about Gary Sinise.
Yeah.
He is a Catholic. He's a convert.
Yes.
He married a Catholic woman, and they had two children, boy, girl. And he went to Mass often with them, but he showed no interest in becoming Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on Easter Eve, they were going to be, kids were going to be confirmed. So he was going along, and they were getting ready to go to church, and he said to his wife, "I have to finish this." He says, "It won't take long." He says, "I'll be on time." Well, when they all got there, the children came out, the mother, and he was in the sanctuary talking to a number of people and a priest. Mm-hmm. And the one of the kids ran over and said, "Hey, Dad, what are you doing here?" And he said, "Well, I thought I'd make this a family event."
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, he was studying with a priest about the Catholic faith, and was doing this very quietly, and was sincerely interested in becoming Catholic because he wanted to.
Yeah. And this actually happened on December the 24th, 2010, when he converted to the Catholic Church and was received into it. His wife, Moira, converted to the Catholic Church in 2000. Now, until about 15 minutes ago, I didn't know any of this information, but one of our kind listeners named Kat sent it to me by email. And so,
I apologize.
No. You got it right. But I mean, you're adding more details to the story than what I knew. But yeah, I'm just looking at what she sent me, that he converted in 2010. And I didn't know that 15 minutes ago. So I'm glad you called.
Yes, and he's a practicing Catholic, very devout.
And I must say, I'm not surprised to hear that. Just knowing the other good things he seems to do in his life, this doesn't surprise me a bit.
A lot of character, like you.
I agree. Oh, you're so kind. Thank you. Well, what else can I say? Nobody calls me Lieutenant Pat. And don't start anything, Cyrus.
Cyrus, go for it.
He's getting ideas.
I think you're
onto
something.
Would that make you Forrest Gump, Cyrus?
I walked into that.
You did, yeah. Well, Anne-Marie, stay warm and well-fed, and I do appreciate you calling me, Anne-Marie. Thank you for giving us the rest of the story on Gary Sinise's conversion to Christianity, well, the Catholic faith. I'll be right back with Hour 2 in just a moment. Please stay right there.
It's a household name.